On Daf Vav Amud Beis, we read a statement from Chelba Amar Rav Huna that anyone who is koveya makom letfilaso, who has a fixed place for tefillah, so such a person is Elokei Avraham Be'ezro. The God of Abraham is will assist him. And they quoted the pasuk about Avraham being koveya makom. And now a very similar. Almost the identical statement, but this is Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Kala koveya makom letfilaso oyivav noflim tachtav. Anyone who is koveya a makom for his tefillah, so his enemies will fall before him. Shenemar v'samti makom la mi Yisrael unitativ v'shachan tachtav. So I'll read the second half of the verse in a second, but this particular verse is found in the prophecy of Nasan Hanavi to David. When David asked him, or told him in Sefer Shmuel, I'm going to build the Beis HaMikdash. You know, how can it be that I dwell in this beautiful house and the Aron of God is sitting in a yeriah, basically in a curtain tent? So Nasan says to him, do whatever you good, excellent, kol shabbavcha aseh, and do what you want. Of course, next morning, Nasan comes back to David and says, oops, sorry, let's put the brakes on that. And God told David that he doesn't want him building Beis HaMikdash. He doesn't tell him explicitly why. That we're told elsewhere. But Nasan tells David that God will build the Beis HaMikdash in the day, will let your child build the Beis HaMikdash. And in that context, God says, I will establish a place for my nation Israel and plant them, and plant it, and they will dwell underneath it, which presumably refers to the Beis HaMikdash, which means once you have a Beis HaMikdash, so that is a makom kavua l'tfila. When you look at Shlomo HaMelech's in the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, so Shlomo's prayer is all about the Beis HaMikdash being a makom of tfila. People pray towards the Mikdash, and God will listen to their prayers. So once you have a makom kavua l'tfila, so now the second part of the verse is, V'lo yirgaz od, they will not be stirred up again. V'lo yosifu b'nei avla la'anoso, and the bad people will no longer afflict them. Meaning their enemies will no longer have any control over them. Kasher barishona, as used to happen. Okay. So that the Gemara earlier doesn't establish it, speaks about Elokei Avraham be'ezro, and here oyvav noflim tachtav. Certainly not too far apart. I think we mentioned last time, having some say that them having a makom kavua l'tfilaso doesn't apply in the Beis HaKnesses. It only applies in your at home. So if you daven at home, like if you're davening at home now during COVID-19, so you should have a makom kavua l'tfila. And some say no, even in the Beis HaKnesses, but everybody says that at least you have a dalet amos of range. It doesn't have to be the exact same space. If you daven in your den or in your living room, you don't have to mark the exact spot on the floor with an X so that when you take your three steps forward, that's where you're standing. It means approximately in the same place. Okay. Now, commenting on the last part of the pasuk, so Rav Huna Ramiksiv. There's five lines from the bottom on Zayin Amid Beis. Rav Huna presented a contradiction between two verses. Ksiv la'anoso, the verse that we just read from the book of Shmuel, says V'lo yosifu b'nei avla la'anoso. The b'nei avla, the people of iniquity, will no longer afflict them. So there it says la'anoso uchsiv, and it is written lechaloso, to destroy them, not to afflict them, but something much stronger. Now the contradiction here is because this pasuk appears almost verbatim in two places, once in Sefer Shmuel and once in the book of Divrei Yamim. In fact, this is a very, very common phenomenon that we find that Sefer Shmuel Melachim has parallels in Divrei Yamim, and often there are sort of minor differences. And I could probably spend 3 hours talking about the various kinds of differences and giving examples. We encountered one, I don't expect anybody to remember this, but we encountered one of the most interesting ones when we learned Maseches Avodah Zarah. In Shmuel Bey's Perek Hay, in David's battles with the Philistines, so it says that in one battle, when they were victorious over the Philistines, it says, Vayazvu sham esatza behem, the Philistines left their idols there. And then it says, Vayisa'im David va'anashav. And the simple reading is, and David and his men carried them away. which obviously from a rabbinic perspective and even from a reading the Torah perspective is a problem, because you're not supposed to take idols, you're supposed to destroy them. In Sefer Divra Hayamim it says, Vayazvu Shama, Vayanichu Shama Tzabehem, they left their idols there, Vayomer David, and David gave the order, Vayisarfu Ba'esh, and they were burned in fire. That's an example of something. There are many different ways of resolving that. One way of resolving it simply is to say, well, it was kind of, since we know the Rishonim say that Divrei Hayamim was written to kind of make David HaMelech and David look particularly good, so they don't want to really tell over the incident as it was. And some Rishonim, more aiming towards Pshat, but not willing to accept that maybe there's a different account here, say the word Vayisa'im sometimes means to actually burn. So it merely means to burn in both places. But Chazal sort of eat their cake and have it too. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah that we learned said no, that you have to understand that when you have a guy who has an Avodah Zarah, so a Jew cannot nullify that Avodah Zarah. A Jew can't be mevatel the Avodah Zarah, but a guy can. A guy has the capacity to be mevatel Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says that the difference between the two passages is Kan Kodem Sheba Itai Hagiti. The pasuk in the Divrei Hayamim that said that David had his men burn it, that was before Itai Hagiti joined his army. And apparently, according to the Gemara, Itai Hagiti was not only from Gas, a Philistine city, but he wasn't Jewish. But he joined David's army anyway. So before he joined the army, when they found idols, they had to burn them. But after Itai Hagiti joined the army, he might have been Lieutenant Itai, but he had a special duty. And one of his duties that he had was to be Mevatel Avodah Zarah, so they could take it and benefit from it. So that's what the Gemara says. Kan Kodem Sheba Itai, Kan La'achar Sheba Itai. Sometimes you have cases where Divrei Hayamim is actually clarifying vocabulary. The sort of famous example of this, when David is dancing before the Aron, so in Sefer Shmuel it says David was Mefazez and Micharker, which are two words that probably exist nowhere else in Tanakh, or at least with that meaning. And the question is, what does Mefazez and Micharker mean? But when you look in the book of Divrei Hayamim, in the exact same pasuk, Ezra changes the words to Misachek and Mirakeid, words that we're much more familiar with. So that's another kind of difference. So here, one might argue it's more like the latter example. It's almost kind of a choice of vocabulary, not a significant difference. But there is something of a difference. In other words, in Sefer Shmuel, it says the B'nai Avla, the iniquitous people, will no longer afflict them. Whereas L'chaloso in Divrei Hayamim will no longer destroy them completely. So one is a little stronger than the other. So to that, the Gemara says, B'tchila, so again, Rav Huna Rami Ksiv. Rav Huna presents a contradiction between two verses. Ksiv L'anoso, Uksiv L'chaloso. So which is it? So b'tchila la'anoso, before the Jewish people sinned, so God's protection would be that no one would even cause them suffering. Ula b'sof, but once they had sinned already, so then God's promise was just enough to protect them from being totally wiped out. The truth is, if you would, in this case, the sequence of psukim works properly. In Sefer Shmuel, it's before the first Beis HaMikdash was even built and destroyed. Once Divrei Hayamim is being written, it's kind of hard to say V'lo Yosifu B'nei Avla Anoso, because B'nei Avla had already afflicted the Jewish people that had destroyed one temple. So now it's V'lo Yosifu B'nei Avla L'chaloso. Once they've sinned, so God will no longer protect them from suffering, but he will protect them from destruction. Okay, fine. So now the Gemara continues with another statement of Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's a fascinating, fascinating statement, the Gemara. It's incredibly important, I would say, in every level of education. The story takes place, this is just after Eliyahu's ascension to heaven. It's in Perek Gimel Malachim Beis. And you have three kings. You have the king of Yehuda, Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. You have the king of Yisrael, I believe Yoram ben Ahav. And finally, you have the king of Edom. And they're going to war with the king of Moab. Not entirely clear. I mean, the king of Moab no longer paid tribute to the king of Yisrael. So they decided to go to war because he was rebelling. He refused to continue to be a vassal. So they come to this place and they have no water. And the king of Yisrael says, Oy vey, God has called us here in order to give us over into the hands of the king of Moab. So the Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, says, is there no ha'ein po Navi Lashem? Maybe there's a Navi to Yud Kevavke, a Navi to God who can help us. So they inquire, and they discovered Po Elisha ben Shafat, Shenemar, Po Elisha ben Shafat asher yatzak mayim al yedei Eliyahu. It says here, present is Elisha, Eliyahu's student, but it doesn't say, I guess the Gemara will say, it says that he poured water on Eliyahu's hands. He was Meshamish Eliyahu. He helped, he assisted Eliyahu. He was his assistant. He was his Shamish. Lomad lo nemar. It doesn't say, Po Elisha ben Shafat asher lomad mipi Eliyahu, but rather, it says, Elayotzak. It doesn't talk about his learning and learning all the great riffs and the Mohammeses and the Rambans and the Rabhaims from Eliyahu. No, it talks about the fact that he was his Shamish. He assisted him. So Ela Malame Shegedola Shimusha Yosemi Limuda. That Shimush of Talmidei Chachamim, of real Talmidei Chachamim, is more important than the Limud. It's greater. Why? So you learn something, you can teach somebody, you can teach something from a book, you can transmit an idea, you can transmit a tradition. But the way we really learn from teachers is by when they're models, when they model for us. And that the modeling, for the most part, you can model when you teach, but modeling is much more powerful when you engage, when you observe a person in their regular daily activities and you watch when they behave, how they behave, that they behave with Yiras Shamayim. Chazal have a comment that even sichasan shel tamidei chachamim, sichas chulan shel tamidei chachamim is Torah. Now, that does not necessarily a statement of fact. I don't know if that's always true, but it's certainly a lesson to those who are tamidei chachamim and those who are trying to teach and model, that your sichas chulan, when your everyday conversation betrays much more about you than when you're sitting and teaching Torah. When you're sitting and teaching Torah, you're conscious of what you're teaching. Hopefully you're behaving properly. But it's in your everyday activities that you actually convey much more of who you are. In a certain sense, the expression isn't exactly linked, but we have a concept in halacha that certain people are not accepted as witnesses. They're not believed. For example, a non-Jew is not believed, generally speaking, in testimony in a formal sense. But there's one circumstance in which a non-Jew is believed, which is meisiach lefitumo. When he's meisiach lefitumo, meaning in his regular conversation, he's not aware that he's giving you official information. He's just going about his kind of regular business. So you want to know what a person is really thinking, what they really think happened, what they really believe happened, and they're not putting on any airs. The answer is when they are meisiach lefitumo. So that is what Sichas Chulin is, and that's really when you engage in Shimush of Tamidei Chachamim, you get to see who they really are and what their behavior really is. So Eliyahu HaNavi presumably was a great individual, and Elisha presumably gained more from his Shimush of Eliyahu than directly learning from Eliyahu. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara actually finally gets into something that has relevance, very important relevance, l'halacha. During the course of this pandemic, so none of us, pretty much, almost none of us, have engaged in Tefillah B'Tzibur. And whatever the obligation of Tefillah B'Tzibur is, it's pretty obvious that Pikuach Nefesh would push aside the obligation of Tefillah B'Tzibur. So if a person, take an isolated case, not our circumstance, if a specific person had a choice, for them to daven B'Tzibur would entail endangering his or her life, so there's no obligation whatsoever to daven b'tzibur. That's absolutely clear, even if there is a general obligation to daven b'tzibur. Okay, so that's the starting point. But the question is, assuming in better times, and God willing, they return, is there a strict obligation to daven b'tzibur? Is there, strictly speaking, a chiyuv tefillah b'tzibur? It's clear there's an obligation to daven. There's an obligation to daven. Whether it's like the Rambam, that the chiyuv of tefillah is daraisa, whether it's like the Ramban, that the chiyuv of tefillah is drabanan, whether it's like the Rav who said there's really no machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, there is an obligation of tefillah, certainly once a day, for those who hold it's midaraisa, and midarabanan, rabbinically speaking, there's an obligation of twice a day, plus mariv, which we paskin is rishus, but we treat it actually as chovah. So there's an obligation to daven three times a day, and simple interpretation, even though it hasn't been the Minhag Yisrael, the obligation is incumbent equally upon men and women. Okay, but the question is, what about a chiyuv of tefillah b'tzibur? Is there any obligation to daven with a minyan? Clearly, there are benefits to davening with a minyan, minimally speaking, because you can recite Dvarim Shebekdusha, so you can recite Kaddish, and you can recite Baruch Hu, and you can recite the Kedusha and Shmon Esrei. And according to one tradition in the Gaonim, you can say the Kedusha in Yotzer Or, in Birchos Kriyashma, without a minyan. Our minhag is that we say it even without a minyan. So there are so many things that you can do. You can't have Kriyas HaTorah without a minyan. So all these incredible things that you can do, you can't do without a minyan. So obviously it's a good thing to daven with a minyan. But is there, strictly speaking, an obligation to daven with a minyan? So the Gemara here, the Gemara, as best as I can tell, never explicitly addresses this issue head on. And even in this discussion, the Rishona, which we'll look at a little bit, it's not really addressed head on at all. If you were to ask me the question, is there an obligation to daven in a minyan? My answer would be sort of, kind of, maybe. And that is a message actually that when you, as we look at some of the Makoros, is sort of the message that comes through. So the Gemara says the following: Amale Rabbi Yitzchak Rav Nachman, three lines from the bottom of Zayin Amid Beis. My time malo asi mar lebe knishta litzaluye. So he said to him, how come the master didn't come to shul, to the Beis HaKnesses, in order to daven? Now, I don't think he was doing a minyan check. I think he was inquiring after, he refers to him as Mar, the master. So he's referring to him in third person. So obviously, Rav Nachman to Rav Yitzchak is some type of a superior figure. So I don't think he's doing a tzitzis check, but he said, you know, was there something happening for me to come to shul? So Amar Le, Rav Nachman said, Lo Yachilna, I wasn't able to. Rashi says, Tosh Kochi, I didn't feel strong enough. Okay, what exactly does that mean? How strong? Was he literally unable to walk? He couldn't come? I don't know. Rashi doesn't say it. Gemara doesn't say it. So then, Amar Le, he says to Rav Nachman, L'chanfe mar asara vilitzle. So why doesn't the master gather 10 people, call 9 other people to your house, and we'll have them in your house? So Amar Le, Tiricha Le Milsa. It's too much for me of a tircha. Again, what's the tircha here, right? He presumably can sit in his house. It's too hard to put out a word. Rav Nachman, remember, was the chief dayan. He was the son-in-law of the Reish Galusa. But he says Tiricha Le Milsa. Maybe he meant he didn't really want to be matriach everybody else. I'm not sure. So then, Rav Yitzchak says to Rav Nachman, okay, V'leima le'mar l'shlucha de tzibura be'idona de mitzah le'tzibura le'se v'lo de'lamar. So why doesn't the master send a message to the shliach tzibur? And here, I don't think it necessarily means the chazan getting up and davening, but it means whoever's running the shul, running the minyan, that be'idona de mitzah le'tzibura, when the community, when the tzibur is davening, they should let you know. Okay, well, what's the point in letting him know? He's not with the tzibur. What difference does it make when he davens? So Amar Lei, Rav Nachman says to him, "My kulei hai, what are you hacking my china for? What are you giving me such a hard time for? Why is this so important?" So Amar Lei, so Rav Yitzchak says to him, "The Amar of Yochan, Mishum of Yishim Yochai." Here it comes back. My dichsiv, va'ani svilasi lecha Hashem, is ratzon. And my tefila is to you, God. I deliver my tefila in an is ratzon, at a time of appeasement, at a time where the tefila is more likely to be accepted. So, Amosai, Ace Ratzon. When is the Ace Ratzon? The answer is Bisha'a Shehatzibur Mishpalim. At the time that the Tzibur is davening, is at that time is an Ace Ratzon. And so it would seem, at least up until this point in the Gemara, that what Rav Yitzchak was saying to Rav Nachman was that even if you can't have a minyan, and even if you can't come to shul, it's better to daven at the time that the Tzibur is davening. So even if I'm at home, and the minyan is taking place in the chapel in KJ. So, okay, so I'll daven. They daven at 8:30 on Sunday morning. So I'll daven at 8:30. I can't come to shul. I'm a vulnerable person. I was a little too tired, and it's too long a walk, and I'm finally up, and now I realize it's 8:28. So I can put my tefillin on and start with Rabbi Yishmael. So I should do it now rather than waiting 20 minutes later, because it's better to daven with the tzibur, even if with doesn't mean physically with the tzibur, not spatially, but temporally. Obviously, it's better to daven with the tzibur as well. Okay. So that's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Isaac?
Yeah, a kaddish with a minyan. Would we assume that you don't need a minyan for kaddish because the whole basis of the kaddish comes from Gadatah, from the story with Rabbi Akiva, and there's no halacha based on Agadatha, so would we assume that you don't need Kaddish with a minyan?
We assume that Kaddish, firstly, the Kaddish itself doesn't come from that Agada in the Zohar with Rabbi Akiva and so on. The idea of a Kaddish Yasson, the idea that someone does Kaddish L'Iloy Nishma, that itself first comes from the Zohar there. But the notion of a Kaddish already exists, like a Kaddish Drabonon, already exists much earlier. Certainly, I'm not going to get to the dating of the Zohar, But it, I don't know if the Gemara certainly speaks about people answering Yehi Shmei Agada Mavarach. But we learned this on Daf Gimel. So it's pretty clear, I think, there was some type of a Kaddish Bizman HaGemara, but it wasn't Kaddish Yasim. It wasn't for mourners or anything like that. And Kaddish is treated as Dvarim Shebekdusha. Even though, by the way, it has no Shem Hashem in it. Even though it has no Shem Hashem, but Kaddish is treated as a Dvar Shebekdusha, and it requires a minion for its recitation. Okay.
Is a tzibur the same definition as an Eda?
I think so, but how would you distinguish between the two? I mean, a tzibur like, 10 males above the age of 13 in a day.
So I'm asking now in terms of today, like in other words, if we can't daven with what we call a minion and say Dvarim Shebekdusha, but we could all daven at the same time, let's say.
Right. So the question of a minion...
In the Kaddish, we already discussed that in the past, but are we considered tzibur then? And is it preferable to daven at the same time?
So let me answer those two questions. The first question about saying Kaddish if 10 of us are daven at the same time is an issue that's related to the question of tzira for a minyan. And tzira for a minyan, generally speaking, requires being in the same space. Right? There is a sugya at the end of Erevin that talks about two spaces on two roofs open to one another and talks about whether if you have the people on one and people on the other, it can be mitzarif to the minyan and so on. But unless, generally speaking, I think either the whole minyan or almost the entire minyan has to be in one space. In fact, I think that we always say that the timing has to be in one space. It's a question of how you combine two rooms next to one another, which are open, but it's irrelevant, I think, in our context. In our context, we're clearly in different spaces. I think even, by the way, in backyards, it's an issue. If there's no fence between two backyards, it's not a problem. I would also add that once you have a minion in a particular place, people who are not in that place, but let's say I have 10 people socially distanced in my backyard, and my backyard neighbor who's behind the fence wants to answer Amein Heshmer Abba and Kedusha, they can. Notice they can get Tefillah B'Tzibur once there is a Tzibur, once there's a minion together. So that was question number one. The second question, from a halachic perspective, I don't know, from a strictly halachic perspective, not from an emotional, psychological, maybe spiritual perspective, I don't think anybody says that if there's no minion, having everybody sort of daven at the same time actually accomplishes anything halachically. I know at least our shul suggested times to people daven which would arrange for that. But even there's going to be a machlokas harishonim, even what this really means. Strangely enough, I thought the Gemara was pretty clear, but we'll see in a second it's not as clear. But even though the most any rishonim will say is that it's good to daven in shul, even if there's no minyan, and it's good to daven at the same time the minyan is davening, even if you are not there. But I don't know that anybody would say that if there's no formal minyan, it's good, halachically speaking, it accomplishes something by having everybody daven at the same time.
What about the balcony minions?
What about the balcony? What's a balcony minion?
Balcony minions where people have a mirpeset. They're close to each other. Each stands on their own mirpeset. They have a total of 10, but they're not in the same makom.
I think you can't have it. You can't have that's not a minion. You can't have the Dvarim Shebekdusha. As far as I know, I could go back and recheck, but I'm pretty sure they have to be in one makom. And once you have the balcony, constitutes a mechitzah in between, and therefore it's nafsik. In fact, there's an issue, even though it's a sensitive issue, and I have some, and I think it depends upon the architecture of the shul, but there's a big machlokas aposkin where the Ezra Nashim has Kedusha Space Haknesses. That bothers me in a certain level, but it's a question that's easier to understand in a world in which, not even forget a balcony, There used to be, you could tell from the tshuvos of Achronim, that sometimes you had the shul, and then you had, at best, a little window to another room. It was basically solid wall blocked off, and that was the Esras Nashim. So in that context, it's easier to understand why someone would say, maybe the Esras Nashim has no Kedusha. And in that case, also the question arises, a man who happens to be standing, if there are no women, and a man is standing Esras Nashim, it's not going to be mitzarif to make a minyan. If there are only 9 people in the Ezras Anashim, and then there's one man standing Ezras Anashim, they're not mitzdarif to a minyan because it's two separate spaces. I find it hard to believe that anybody in a shul, I don't know about a balcony situation, but like in a shul I normally daven in, where there's a mechitza built into the shul, but fundamentally speaking, it's the same room. It's hard for me to imagine anybody would say that the Ezras Anashim doesn't have Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. But you can more easily understand that when it's a separate, totally, really, essentially separate room, separate place, And in that case, it's clear that not mitzarif for a minyan. It might even be true, even in the context, just the mechitza, even if the Ezras Nashim has Kedusha, the mechitza might be masik and prevent the person from being mitzarif to the minyan. But certainly in a case where everybody's on a balcony, and we're not doing Erev now, but the walls of the balcony are tall enough to constitute a 10 tefach mechitza, we certainly hope there are 10 tefach there, otherwise you have bigger problems than just a minyan, rather sakanas nefashos, forget COVID. So I don't think that would be mitzarif. I think you have to... I don't think we pay attention to property lines. If you had backyards that adjoin and there's no fence, the fact that I'm on my property and you're on your property doesn't prevent tzibur. But once you put up a wall between a mechitza, so then it constitutes two separate rishuyas.
So okay. Rabbi Weider, in fact, if you're ever in Prague and you go to the shul where the Maharal Mi Prague davened, the Ezras Noshim is separated from the a men's shul by a solid wall of rock, and all there are holes in there so that the women could look through. It's actually a totally different place.
So
I think that may very well be the way synagogues were constructed in 600 or 800 years ago, first of all, there was no place for the women in a lot of places, but when there was, it was totally separated from the men.
In fact, I know that one of the interesting questions here, I think we are, I want to say lenient, when women recite Kaddish, they don't come into the men's section. But I know that if you look at the literature, I think it was Rabbi Walowelski who wrote the article about this and cited people from Europe who said that, like Reb Chaim Ozer's minyan, so a woman, I forget who it was, would come in at the end to recite the Kaddish Asom. She would come into the men's section. And I presume that was because, I have no idea what the shul was, what the structure was, but wherever she was, and unless she just wasn't in shul, and it didn't matter, or there was no Ezras Nashim, so she just came in to say the Kaddish at the end. But that's a question as well. I mean, our assumption, I think, in schools where women do say Kaddish is they don't come into the men's section, they say it from where they are. And my assumption is that once you have a minion, I would guess once you have a minion in a certain place, someone who can sort of attach themselves to that place can then recite the Devarim Shebe Kedusha wherever they are. Okay. So now the Gemara says, continues. So we had one verse that spoke about an Ace Ratzon. And Rabbi Yosef on the third line on Chesamar Aleph, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina, Amar Mehacha. To Amar Hashem, the Eis Ratzon Anisicha. Wait, make sure I have the pasuk right. Anisicha, Uviyon Yeshua Azarticha. So God says, I answered you on an Eis Ratzon. So again, so you see that God answers in David and Tehillim says, I pray to you in Eis Ratzon. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina says that God answers in an Eis Ratzon. And now comes the very, very, very difficult pasuk. Rav Acha Rabbi Hanina on the fourth line, Amar Mehacha. This is the source. The source for what? So until now, what we've seen is that the Eis Ratzon is the time that the Tzibur is davening. It doesn't tell you necessarily that you need to daven in the Tzibur or that the tefillah of the Tzibur itself is heard, but rather that the time that the tzibur is davening is considered an Eis Ratzon. And hence, Rabbi Yitzchak was saying to Rav Nachman in the previous Amud, even if you can't make it to shul, and even if you can't gather a minyan, at least daven at the same time the tzibur is davening. Okay, but now Rav Acha Bar Chanina quotes a pasuk, Hein el kabir v'lo yim'as. So this pasuk is extremely, extremely difficult. Firstly, what does it mean? And number two, what does it have anything to do with what we're talking about? Now, I want to quote the second pasuk, Uksiv, in a totally unrelated place. The pasuk I just read is from the book of Iyov. The pasuk I'm about to read is from the book of Tehillim, of Psalms. So Uksiv, the second pasuk is, Padav Shalom Nafshi, God redeem my soul with peace, Mikirovli, in the battles that were against me. Kirov is the Aramaic word for war. Ki virabim hayu imadi, because with the majority, with the many, they were with me. So I sort of understand what the second verse might be teaching, which is that God accepts the tefillah when you daven with a tzibur. And in fact, the next line is Tanya Nami Hachi. Let's just read that, and we're going to come back to this. Minayin she'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu moes b'tfilasam shel raven. How do you know that God doesn't reject the prayer of a tzibur, of a community? Shenemar hein el kabir velo yimas uktsiv padav shalom nafshi mikrav li kivra abim hayuim adi. Now, so I'm still confused as to what the verse from Eov has to do with anything. But notice that there's also a change in the focus of the Gemara. It's no longer that the time that the community is praying is considered an es ratzon, an auspicious time for tefillah, but rather the tefillah of the tzibur is not rejected by God. That doesn't mean that if the tzibur is davening and I'm at home, it accomplishes anything for me to daven at the same time the tzibur does. But the other problem is, the second verse doesn't indicate at all kiva rabim hayu emadi. It doesn't necessarily speak about prayer. Okay, so that just says that God redeemed my life. He created peace for me from the wars because many were with me. Okay, it doesn't say anything about tefillah, but okay. So I presume that is what the verse in Eov is doing here. So now, here's the catch, though. Hein el kabir velo yim'as. Literally, it means, behold, hein is short for hine. God, kabir, God is mighty, and he doesn't reject. Now, what is the second half of the verse? So that the Gemara doesn't cite, but it says, kabir koach lev. Kabir is strong again. Koach lev is the strength of the heart. So my assumption is that what this verse is doing here is teaching us the link to tefillah. Now, what is it? What is the link to tefillah? Tefillah is koach lev, because when we talk about avoda shebelev, right, avdo b'chol levavchem, when we serve God with all of our hearts, Chazal say, avdo b'chol levavchem, zo tefillah. Now, and it says that God doesn't reject the tefillah, but what is God not rejecting? How do you know this is talking about the tefillah of a yachid as opposed to the tefillah of a rabbin? Rashi writes on the word kabir lo yim'as. If you look at the top line on the page, tefillas harabim lo yim'as. Okay, so that's nice, but how does that connect to an individual? So it may be that Rashi thinks that this verse tells us Hein el kabir velo yim'as, God doesn't reject the koach lev of the rabbin, the tefillah of the rabbin. And then the other verse from Psalms is ki v'rabim hayu imadi, somehow means I wasn't with the tzibur, but I was sort of with them. I was at the same time, but not together with them. I want to make one other possible suggestion. I know it's going out on a limb a little bit, but how they get the idea from hein el kabir velo yim'as, that God doesn't reject the tefillah of an individual who davens at the same time as a tzibur. And that is that, what does the word hein mean? So I just told you the word hein means hine, it's short. In fact, hein, when they teach you in grammar, they tell you that heim with a mem is the third masculine plural pronoun. Heim is they for men. And they tell you that hein is they for women. So I have a little disappointing news. In biblical Hebrew, the word hein with a nun never means they for feminine. That word is heina. The word hein in biblical Hebrew is always short for hine. In fact, if you want to see a good example of them together, Moshe gets angry in Parshas Matos, and I hope we will get to hear this, Birab and Bitzibor. Hein heina hayu levnei Yisrael bedvar belam. Hein heina means hine heina. Behold, they. Okay. So that's what the word hein means in biblical Hebrew. However, Chazal in a number of places have a different interpretation of the word hein. And I'll cite just one example. The Torah says that if a man is married to a woman and then he has a sexual relationship with a woman within two generations, meaning a mother, daughter, grandmother, granddaughter of the woman he's married to, it says, Ba'esh yisrafu oso v'eshen v'lo siyes yima b'sochachem. You shall burn him and them feminine, right, in fire. So the question is, why would you kill both women? One of them didn't do anything wrong. The woman he's married to didn't violate one of the prohibited arayos. It's only the woman who he wasn't married to, the woman within two generations. So clearly you can't kill the man, execute him, and both women. One of them did nothing wrong. But the question is, why does the Torah use the plural there? So I believe it's Rabbi Yishmael who darshins in Sanhedrin, Eshen doesn't mean them. It means Ba'esh Yisrafu Oso V'es Achas, and one of them. And you know why? Because the word Hina in Greek means one. And there are at least several places in rabbinic literature where they darshan the word Hain as Hina, as one, instead of the simple sense meaning of scripture. And so it could be Hen El Kabir Lo Yamas. Hen is the tefillah of a single individual. I may be going out too far on a limb, but it is exceedingly, exceedingly difficult to understand, even with that, how exactly the Gemara puts these two pieces together. But okay, so let's accept, however they learned it, from the particular verse, and it's a drasha, obviously. It's an agadic type drasha. So the question is, which is the message the Gemara is really sending? Is that the time that Tzibur davens is an Eis Ratzon, and you should daven even if you're not with the Tzibur at that time? Or is it really that it's the tefillah of the Tzibur that counts, that God is not Moes b'tefillasan shel Rabin? God doesn't reject the tefillah of the community. Now, if you... I'm going to bring up, I know that many of you don't have it, so I'm going to share my screen now. And I'm going to share a passage in the Rif, in our Gemara. So if you want to look in the back, you can see it in the Rif. But in the Rif here, so the Rif has done the following. I'm going to start from the top. I'm in the Bar Ilan now. The first statement that the Rif learned, we learned earlier, but I'm going to present it now. Abba Binyamin Omer, I'm going to just highlight. Ein tfilaso shel adam nishmas ela bebeis haknesses. A person's tfila is only heard in the beis haknesses, or it's best heard in the beis haknesses, or accepted. Shenemar, lishmoa el arina vela tfila, b'makom rina shamte tfila. So we saw this drasha earlier. The Omer, Rabbi Yochanan Mishum, Rabbi Yosei ben Zimra, Ein tfilaso shel adam nishma'as ela bebeis haknesses. Same statement. Shenemar va'ani tfilasi lecha eis ratzon. Emasai eis ratzon v'sha'a shehatzibor mispalolim. So the Rif, I don't know if he had a different text in our Gemara. The Rif doesn't see there, he doesn't quote the story with Rav Nachman of Yitzchak. He just says that tefillah is best heard in the Beis HaKnesses and when you're davening b'tzibur, not necessarily davening alone. And then he quotes Rabbi Yosef b'chanina amar mehacha be'es ratzon anisicha. And Rav Nachman amar mehacha el kabir v'lo yamas. Tanya nami hachi, minayin she'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu moes b'tfilasan shel rabim she'nenmar hein el kabir v'lo yamas uchsiv pada b'shalom nafshi mikravli ki v'rabim hayu imadi. The end. So when you read the Rif, it doesn't sound like there's an idea of davening either in a shul, when there's no minyan going on, or davening at home at the same time that the tzibur is davening. Rabbeinu Yonah, however, quotes the following. He doesn't state explicitly, I think, that he's arguing what he's quoting argues on the Rif, but nonetheless, it clearly to me the Rif doesn't say this. The Gaonim said, "Sha'afilu kishein ha'adam holeich lebeis haknesses, yeshlo l'sha'er sheyispalo b'shar shemispalum hakahol." So the Gaonim said, number one, which is the simple reading of the first part of our Gemara, that even if you can't go to shul, nonetheless you should try to daven the same time the tzibur is davening. V'od amru, "Sha'afilu kishein ha'tzibur mispalulim." It's a good place for davening to be heard. One would also add that davening in a Beis HaKnesses, even if nobody's there, is conducive to a proper tefillah from the vantage point of the prayer for concentrating. When you're in your home, so you're looking around, so you're davening, hopefully you have intent, but you open your eyes, you see everything that's going on. You're in a Beis HaKnesses and you open your eyes, you see an empty shul, but you see an Aron Kodesh, you see the pews, you understand that you're in a Makom Tefillah. The Hadam Rinan ain't Tefillaso Shel Adam Nishnas Ela Beis HaKnesses. All right, so I'm going to leave off this last statement. We're going to come back to this. Okay, so despite the Rif's comments, and I believe it is cited, I think this tradition is cited in the Shulchan Aruch, it is better, I'm going to reach up and read you the Shulchan Aruch, if you can't daven with the minyan in the shul, better to daven at the same time, or better to daven in shul even though there's no tzibur there at that time. And in Shulchan Aruch, it says the following. In Simen Sadi in Orachayim, in Siftes, it says, Yishtadel Adam lehispalel bebeis haKnesses im atzibur. A person should be mishtadel, should make an effort, should struggle, should try to daven in shul with the tzibur. And by the way, coming back to my comments earlier in our shir, you know, chayiv is not the word that, you know, yishtadel implies you should make an effort. And he doesn't say chayiv. V'im hu onus she'eno yochel lavo lebeis haKnesses, if it is, you're unable to make it to shul, yechavein lispalo b'sha shehatzibur mispalim. A person should try to daven at least at the same time the tzibur is davening. And then I'm going to skip over the Ramah for a second. The Mechaber now continues. V'chein im nenas v'lo ispalel b'sha shehispalilu hatzibur v'hu mispal b'yachem. Something happened. You weren't able to make it to Minyan. You're davening alone. Afal pikein yispalel b'beis haKnesses. So despite the Rif seemingly reading the Gemara differently, the position of the Shulchan Aruch is that if you can't make it to shul to daven with the tzibur, you should try to daven at that time. And if you can't make it to shul to daven with the tzibur at the time of davening, but you can make it to shul, you should at least go to shul to daven. Okay, so that is actually what emerges at least from this particular Gemara. Okay. Isaac, question?
Yeah. Is it for the purpose of the tefillah, or is it for the purpose of getting you to be ruggle to daven at a consistent time? Who benefits out of it? Is it you, or is it tefillah?
So I would say that it depends. If you're talking about davening with the tzibur, the answer is it could be yes and yes. Meaning we can talk about the metaphysical, which I can't really talk about. The Gemara suggests that somehow a tefillah is more miskabel when it's with the tzibur. I mean, God hears either way. It's not that God is so busy that, you know, he sets aside time when the tzibur is davening to listen to their prayers, but when I daven at some other time, he doesn't have time for me. Obviously, that's ridiculous. It's simpler to understand this on the psychological level to a human being. Right? A tefillah with more kavana is a tefillah that's better, a tefillah that is more a miskabel. When you daven with the tzibur, you put yourself in a frame of mind firstly, you don't feel alone anymore, even though I'm alone physically, but I know that I'm davening at the same time that tzibur is davening. I'm davening, you know, with them. I'm davening along with them, even if I'm not with them. And then when you daven in the Beis HaKnesses, again, it accomplishes the same thing for your tefillah. It puts you in a different frame of mind. I don't think that it's about habituating, you know, that it, you know, to daven in a regular time per se, because the truth is, if you're not davening with the tzibur and the tzibur is not davening, there's no kapeda in davening at the exact same time every day. It might be good I always say to my students that it is a good idea for them, especially when they don't have structure in their day, you should get up and you should daven at a certain time because you should get your day going, right? Because otherwise, you know, you're tempted to stay, you know, here's what you could do. That you can imagine our college students and teenagers goes like this. Sosman Kriya Shema now is about 9 o'clock. Sosman Tefillah is about 10:15. So make sure I roll over at 8:58, and then I'll say Kriya Shema quickly in my bed, roll back to sleep at 9:40, get up, you know, splash some water on my face, wash the tiyasidayim, get my tefillah on quickly, and get in, you know, a tefillah before Sosman Tefillah, right? But that's not, you know, ideally what we want. It's not good for us as people, and it's not good for them. You want them to work in an ofan that is misudar. It should be in order. It should have some kind of discipline. And it happens to be that tefillah does actually provide something like that. So I think it would be good to daven at a fixed time, But I don't think that's good per se about the tefillah. That's good for life in general. But here, I think both of these angles in the Gemara are about improving the quality of your tefillah per se, because it helps you focus your mind, either because the space you're in, or because the idea that you're doing it at the same time, you feel part of a tzibur. Even though you don't hear them, you know they're davening as you are davening. Okay. And now, because the Gemara had quoted that verse of Pada b'shalom nafshi, mikravli ki verabim hayu imadi. So now, the Gemara quotes a related interpretation to this, or another interpretation on this pasuk. My pada b'shalom nafshi. What does it mean, God redeemed in peace my soul? So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kol HaOsek BaTorah UveGemilus Chasadim, UMispalel Im HaTzibur, Mala Ani Alav Ki'ilu Pidoani Li VeLivni MiBein Umos HaOlam. God, remember, in the rabbinic tradition, goes into exile with us. Imo Anochi B'Tzara, or actually the source for that God goes into exile with us is a pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, when it says that if we do tshuva, v'shav Hashem Elokecha Shvoscha, it doesn't say the heshiv in the binyan hifil, God will cause us to return, but it says v'shav, and God will return. And therefore, God goes with us into exile. So a person who engages in gemilus chasadim and Torah, which are based upon the word shalom, Rashi says that Torah is described as v'chol nesivoseh shalom, all of its ways are peace, and a person who engages in gemilus chasadim creates peace. And then, ki v'rabim hayu imadi at the end of the verse. So one does those three things. Torah, gemilas chasadim, and tefillah b'tzibur. So that person is as if he's pada v'shalom nafshi, has redeemed, it's God speaking now, he has redeemed and effectively me. So he has redeemed the Jewish people, and God have now been redeemed from amongst the nations. Okay. This is a way of the Gemara saying that these three things are three central things that a Jew should be preoccupied with. Okay. And then...
Rabbi, Lifu Libanai. Libanai is B'nai Israel?
Yes. Okay. That's what I assume. I don't know. I'm not sure what the alternative would be. It doesn't make sense for it to be David talking because he's not an exile. So I know that you can have anachronism, but it's one thing for God to, at this time when it's written, to be the voice speaking, even though he's not in exile yet, because he will go into exile, but David's never going to go into exile. So, although technically speaking, David actually did go into exile. David did go. He went into exile once. David went into exile at the end of Shaul's life when he finally decided that Shaul was going to catch him if he didn't get out of there, and he fled to the lands of Plishkim. Mm-hmm. And David says to Shaul at their last meeting, you know, he cursed the people who were inciting Shaul against him. He says, "Ki gershuni hayom mehemistapeach benachlas Hashem." Gerush is exile, being chased away. But nonetheless, I think it refers to God and the Jewish people. In other words, these things contribute to redemption. Okay. So now the Gemara, in related thematically, it's not, at least this is connected. We're about to read from a concept perspective, not the names. Amar Reish Lakish, the first medium with line in the Gemara and Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Amar Reish Lakish, Kol mi sheyesh lo beis hakneses be'iro, ve'eino nichnas sham lehispalel, nikra shochein ra. A person who has a shul in his city and doesn't enter there to daven is called a bad neighbor. Now, I presume that this doesn't mean if a person misses minyan once or twice or three times. It means that a person has a beis hakneses in his ear, and he never goes to daven there, or almost never goes to daven there. And I would actually go a step further than that, based upon the next verse. This doesn't refer to someone, it may be someone who never goes, but even more than that, if it's a person who doesn't contribute to making a minyan when it's needed. And I remember a number of years ago, I was very, very disturbed to hear from a JLAC rabbi. I went to visit the campus to give a shiur. And I asked him, you know, what we spoke about minyanim, and he said, you know, they try to have a minyan during the week, but they don't always get it. And they have plenty of yeshiva day school graduates who he was disappointed. I was very upset. It's one thing if you choose not to go to minyan, but it's much, much, okay, so people, firstly, many young people in their college years are in a little bit of an odyssey, you know, a little bit like, you know, Rumspringa, like Amish Rumspringa. But when a community needs to make a minion and you can't be Mitzdareif to participate, that's a black mark, right? If there's a minion already, and I'm not so from. So I don't always go to minion, though, right? I don't go to the minion. But if the minion can happen without you, that's one thing. But if they can't make a minion because you won't get up to daven because there aren't enough people otherwise, that's a shachein ra. That's a bad neighbor. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk, and you'll see why I said this. The Gemara says, Shenema, ko amar Hashem, al kol shcheinai ha-ra'im ha-nogi'im banachala, asher inchalti es ami es Yisrael. So the simple sense meaning of this pasuk has nothing to do with Jews doing bad things. It has to do with the Jewish neighbors. Yirmiyahu is talking. At the time of the destruction, there were Jewish neighbors, Ammon and Moab and Edom. And the way one of the commentators explains here is they could have helped. They are relatives in a certain sense. They could have helped us, and instead they didn't do anything. They didn't help. And God says about them, because they didn't help, they are Shechinai Haraim Hanogim Banachala. It's like they stretched out their hands against the portion, the inheritance that I'd given the Jewish people. So one of the commentators says, because they could have come and helped, and they didn't help, they're called bad neighbors. V'lo'od, ela shegorein galus lo ulavanav shenemar, they cause themselves, the person who never walks into the community, causes exile, shenemar, henini no tsham me'al adam asam, I am going to pluck them off their lands, ve'es beis Yehuda etosh mitocham, I'm going to pluck the Jewish people out of them and return them to the land of Israel. I think what the Gemara means here is that when you have a Beis HaKnesses, so a person has to be part of the Beis HaKnesses. Today, obviously, we have communities where there are lots of Batei Knesses, but typically it would have been one Beis HaKnesses. Towns were small, cities were tiny, and a person who doesn't go to the Beis HaKnesses, he's a Shachin Ra, because he doesn't allow a community to function. And in addition, when he doesn't make himself as part of a community, he causes himself an exile for himself and his children. He causes himself to be distanced from the Jewish community. The Rambam comments that in Hilchos Tshuva, that amongst the things that make it difficult for a person to do tshuva is a poresh min hatzibur. A person who is poresh min hatzibur. Why? Because if someone separates themselves out of the community, when the community then does tshuva finally, when they come to their senses and realize they need to change the way they do things, he's not there to participate in that tshuva. So it doesn't make it impossible, but it makes it awfully difficult. And I think it's the same thing here. The person who doesn't make himself part of the Beis HaKnesses, which is the community, so that person causes himself and his children to be exiled. Okay. And then...
Rabbi, another comment, Rabbi?
Yes.
It's an interesting thing. A lot of people like that would say, they themselves say, I'm a bad Jew. And usually the response is, there's no such thing as a bad Jew, you're a Jew. But now we can have a response, you're a bad neighbor.
Fine, fair enough. When I think back to the story I mentioned, it just boggles my mind. I understand the college, I understand anybody not going to Minyan on occasion, maybe even not making it their thing. In our community, it's not surprising. But when you're needed for a Minyan, it's like, that's crazy. Like that's a Shachin Ra. It's really a Shachin Ra. Okay. One of the Rishonim, by the way, comments here also. He says, Kol sheyesh le'beis HaKnesses bi'ibro. I don't think this is pshat, but points out, I think it may be in Rabbeinu Yonah, in fact. Let me just share for a second, see if it is or I'm making it up. Hold on. No, it's not in Rabbeinu Yonah. I forget who said it, but who said that it's in their days. It used to be that most Batei Knesios were in the fields. They weren't in the city. And the claim is that if the Beis HaKnesses is in the field, you're not a Shachin. You should go, but you're not a Shachin Ra for not going. But when it's so easy, it's in the city. It's not a dangerous place at all. Then to not go is really a Shachin Ra. Okay. Fine. Then the Gemara continues, thematically connected again, not based upon the names, on the fourth narrow median line. Amrule the Rabbi Yochanan, Ika Sabe Babavel. There are old people in Babel. So Tama Viamar, Rabbi Yochanan scratched his head and said, what? How is that? Leman Yerbu Yimechem Yimevenechem, Al Ha Adama Ksiv. Avabuchutzalar, it's low. It's a very, very strange drasha that some of the Mepharshim had struggled with this a lot. What Rabbi Yochanan didn't know there were people who lived a long life in Chutz Laaretz. And the Pshat in the Pasuk, we read this as the last verse in the second section of Kriya Shema, L'mayin Yiburim Mechem Yechem Al-Dama, doesn't mean that you can't live long in Chutz Laaretz. It means if you don't obey God's mitzvahs, you're not going to last on the land. It has nothing to do with long life, living a long lifespan in Eretz Yisrael versus people outside of Eretz Yisrael. Whatever the basis for the drasha is, Rabbi Yochanan wondered, why are the people live such a long time in Chutz Laaretz? So, Kevan da Amri Le, but when they said to Rabbi Yochanan, Mikadme u'mechashche lebei kenishta, that no, the people, they come early and they to the Beis HaKnesses and they leave late. They go there in the morning and they go come back at night. Amar haynu dahani lei. That's why they merit long life. Kida Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Levane kadimu v'chashichu v'aylu lebei kenishta. Come early, stay late. Meaning in the morning, come in the evening, come and enter the Beis HaKnesses. Kihechi, so that the tarchu chaye, that you should live a long life. Okay, so again, I don't. This should not be regarded as a segula per se. It's not a magic, but a person who makes it a priority to go to the Beis HaKnesses in the morning and to go to the Beis HaKnesses at night is establishing where the priorities in life are, which are namely their spiritual priorities. And now the Gemara wants to know: can you find me a proof text to this? That someone who is visiting the Beis HaKnesses with this regularity will merit long life. So Amar Rabbi Acha b'Rabbi Chanina Maikra, what verse will support this? Ashrei Adam Shomei Ali, Lishkod Al Dalsosai Yom Yom, Lishmor Mizuzos Pisachai. That this verse is found in the book of Proverbs, in Mishlei, in a two-chapter section, which is the Song of Wisdom. Wisdom speaks, chapters 8 and 9, where wisdom offers her speech to humanity to try to attract people to come. And wisdom says, praised is the person who listens to me to be waiting upon by my doors, yom yom, right? Twice a day, we could say, to watch, lishmor mizuzos pesachai, to guard the doorposts of my doors. Now, assumption is the makom where wisdom is found is presumably the Beis HaKnesses or the Beis HaMedrash, the shul of the study hall. And then Uchsiv Basrei, after a few verses later, it says, Ki motzi matza chayim. The next verse says that the one who finds me has found life. And therefore, someone who is shokeid al dalsei Beis HaKnesses, who makes it his or her business to be waiting there, yom yom, day and night, we might say. So that's a person is kimotzi matzah chayim. The person who finds wisdom like that has found long life. Okay. And now one last statement in this vein. We'll close with one halachic statement with a number of different interpretations. The Gemara says the following. Amar Rav Chista, la'olam yikanes adam shnei psachim ebeis haknesses. A person should always enter in two doors to the shul. So the Gemara says, what? Shnei psachim? What does that mean? You have to enter through two different doors. What does it mean to enter shnei psachim? So the Gemara says, no. What it means is, ela emar shior shnei psachim. When you enter the shul, you should enter two door lengths into the shul. The achar kach yispalo. Then you should daven. So what does this mean? So Rashi says, if you look at the Rashi, a bit higher than where we are in the Gemara. It's about if you go in the Gemara, where the fifth wide line in the Gemara, right next to that in Rashi, Shir Shel Shnei Psachim, Rochav Yikanes Lefnim, Shelo Yeshev Samoch Lepesach. You shouldn't sit within two door lengths of the door. Dinire Alov Kimasui. It appears like you want to get out of there already. Ikov Beis HaKnesses, having to be in Shul, is a burden to you. V'yehei Mezuman Samoch Lepesach Latzeis. And you really just want to get out of there. From the moment you walk in, you want to get out of there. Tosos doesn't like this. Tosos is not actually found printed in our text. It's printed the Bach actually prints a text of Tosos. And Tosos says the following. He says, no, it doesn't mean physically. Let's say you have seats in the shul. Let's say in KJ, I don't remember. There's a little bit of an aisle in the back, Lenny, right? But I don't know. Is it two door widths? Should you not sit in the back row? You know, because you're right next to the door. So the answer is, Tosas, no. It means that when you enter shul, the amount, you shouldn't step in and daven immediately. You should wait the amount of time that it takes to have a shiur shnei pesach, to walk a shiur shnei pesachim. In other words, you come into shul, you collect yourself a little bit, and then you begin to daven. There is a third interpretation, which is cited by the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't remember who actually says it. I think it's the Maharami Rutenberg, quoted in the Torah, is that it only refers to a situation when there's a Pesach Pasuch Shazarabim, when the door is open to the main thoroughfare because of a distraction. Now, this is an issue of a distraction. So you shouldn't daven. What it really means is you shouldn't daven in a place in a shul where there's a door that's being opened to a place that, where there's stuff going on that's going to distract you. So those are the three different reasons that are offered for interpretation. The Aruch HaShulchan himself suggests that many shuls have vestibules. They have sort of entryways. So that eliminates the problem with Rashi Shita. So he says that in such a situation, if where you have a vestibule, which will be blocking anyway the view to the Shasarabim, and you wait 30 seconds, when you walk into shul, you can fulfill all three positions. That of Rashi, that you shouldn't be sitting within that distance of the door. That of the Maharami Rutenberg, that you shouldn't have the distractions. And that of Tosfos, that you should take a moment to collect yourself from the time you walk into shul until you actually begin talking.
Okay. Rabbi, the Steinsaltz Gemara mentions that in Beit Alpha, it shows a picture of a shul in Beit Alpha, and says the Talmud Yerushalmi says that shuls in Yerushalayim, in Israel, at the time, were built with this lobel vestibule structure, you know, that we have.
Right. So, yeah, I did see there's a Yerushalmi that a number of the Rishonim cite in defense of Rashi, where it really sounds like it's a physical distance. So thank you for bringing that reference. It means that apparently they really did. It does sound like the practice in Eretz Yisrael is consistent with the Yerushalmi, that they actually created a physical gap. Okay. I guess you just have to tell the people, because this is a certain kinds of people like to daven in the aisles. So you should be told, in this case, you shouldn't daven in those. Aside from the...
Encourage people to move to the front of the shul, as the rabbi does often.
Okay. Very good. So we're going to stop here, and we will pick up next week, God willing. And it's the same link. And I hope everybody has a good week and should continue to stay safe and healthy.
Thank you.